Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see 100,000, 600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had a number of shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So, if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, today, and our podcast has been rebranded. Originally, it was called It's My House, for a better part of, well, we've been on 10 and a half years, and it was called It's My House originally, and we've made a couple other rebrands, but now we're sticking with Build Solar Homes. So today on Build Solar Homes, our jump-off title, before we go to the phone lines, the topic, is Solve 100 Property Tax Arithmetic Problems. Solve 100 Property Tax Arithmetic Problems. And that's a habit that you might want to pick up, and I'll tell you why, but we'll be back right after this uplifting song, and then we'll get into that.
Yeah!
behind this mansion is just about as stunning as the home itself.
I built this house not just for my immediate family, but for my extended family, including friends.
Reggie Van Lee was a performer in the Alvin Ailey Dance Company. The Harvard graduate recently retired as an executive vice president at a Houston consulting firm. He moved out of his home in River Oaks after building this 20,000-square-foot estate for himself, his three sisters, and their families.
There's a hair salon for my sisters. The pool is for the grandkids.
Well, this kitchen was designed for this house by my wife, TJ.
Mark Zafars lives here. He's married to Reggie's sister.
It's fine. We each have our own space, so we can see each other as often as we want.
That's why the 59-year-old says he built this house so their family could make many memories together.
As much as people say, oh, that's so nice of you to do this for your sisters, they have no idea the joy I get myself.
Well, this is my favorite room.
It's a small church inside the house. This wing sort of resembles a fancy apartment building hallway. Here you'll find doors that lead to private living quarters.
My front door is rear. We each have a kitchen. We have a living room. We have a washer-dry area. And we have two bedrooms, one master and a guest. Mm-hmm. And then each of those have bathrooms, separate bathrooms.
You arrive at the master suite on a separate side of the home. Notice this picture of Reggie with Rosa Parks, this one with President Clinton, and this photo with former First Lady Michelle Obama. The unconventional family man worked with the Clinton Foundation, was appointed to a couple of committees by President Obama, and got the idea to build a family estate when he was invited to the Kennedy compound by Caroline Kennedy.
In 1976, this little black boy from Sunnyside said, I'd like to have a family compound someday.
In case you're wondering, the benevolent brother isn't the only one picking up the tab. His oldest sister, Carolyn, for instance, is a retired HISD educator and still teaches at an area college.
We all contribute to the pot of money that covers the food and covers the housekeeper and covers the groundskeeper and covers the utilities.
They're talking about it in hopes of encouraging other families to follow suit, even if on a smaller scale.
I think other people should do that. I think if we did more of that, we'd have more happiness in the world and a lot less tension.
I'm Domalee Keith, Fox 26 News.
Property tax arithmetic problems. That's our jump off topic for today. We want to come to that in about 2 to 3 minutes. I'm looking for an audio, and I think I found it. Let me play just a teeny bit of this to see if it's it, and then we'll come back and then go to the phones.
Well, you're about to discover, maybe for the first time in your life, that wealth is not money, and money's not wealth.
No, that's not what I was looking for. Okay, so let's go for, because I'm taking notes here. Some things you don't hear for a while, and then sometimes I have to go back and replay these podcasts myself. So solve 100 arithmetic problems. So let's go back a week ago today. I was at 10:30. Now we usually start this program at 10:30. So last week, I told you guys that I won't be here at 10:30. We're gonna start a little bit later, and then we had to start a little bit later than that last Wednesday because I had a status hearing to attend regarding my mother's estate. So. But they were running, the court was running about 30 to 45 minutes behind. So I got to listen to 30 to 45 cases before they called my mother's estate case. So one of those cases really stood out to me, which was a lady that owes $175,000 in back taxes. She doesn't pay that. She can be foreclosed on and lose the family house. So that really stuck in my mind. I said, there's a whole lot of things that that are there. So many that we can't put them in one podcast. So that's why we have a podcast now. It comes on at 6:30. And this week we're running new podcasts because I got to find co-hosts for all these things and all this other stuff. But we have, you know, we went 5 Monday, 5 yesterday. So normally we ran 2 a day for, you know, most of the 10.5 years. One a day. So in the last 2 days, not including this podcast, we did 10 live streams in 2 days, which would normally take us 2 weeks, just doing one a day. So this week we're just getting things in order, getting things legal, and then putting them. Then we, when we get certain things done offline, then we can put it online, and then over the weekend, then we can make things just improve week by week by week. So by the end of this week, we shall have 10 podcasts a day, running from 10:30 until Eastern Standard Time, until maybe 10:30 at night. Probably 10 o'clock at night. So other than this one, now this one can run 2 hours, 2 hours plus. The other podcast, they'll run anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. Most of them will be like 30 minutes. We got one that runs 15 minutes. And we did some test drive. You know, a test drive was like 2 or 3 minutes. All right, we're on the air, come back tomorrow. But that's this week. Next week is a different story. Because we want to have all this done before the end of the month and Labor Day. So anyway, so the problem that we're working on this week is one of the this lady's $175,000 tax bill. So we came to the conclusion that, number one, she doesn't have a legal problem. She has an arithmetic problem. Let's wrap your head around that. Number two, she is property tax illiterate, therefore she must become property tax literate. The more literate you become in a topic, the more enlightened you become in a topic, which means you can solve that problem. And we also know every problem has multiple solutions. The more enlightened that you become, the more of the possibilities that you will see. All right, now, one of the ways, and those are just some basic principles, and we're writing an ebook this week to go along with this particular topic. It'll be about 10 pages, and then we'll have a little workbook with it. Something that's simple, digestible. Oh, you can just pick it up. Something a third grader can comprehend. All right. Now, so how did we come up with today's title? Solve 100 property tax arithmetic problems. Well, I attended law school. I've only done one L so far, first year. I don't have any ambitions to become a lawyer. It's just I got in a lawsuit one time with a squatter, and lawyers were costing just $2,000 just to go into court, $2,000 an hour. So I said, you know what? It's cheaper for me to just go to law school. So that's what I did. I applied and I got accepted, and I enrolled. And it takes up a lot of your time. Bare minimum, you got to put in 4 hours a day. I marvel. Sometimes I put in 6 to 8 hours because you got to do a lot of reading. It's not difficult. Not difficult at all. It's that you just got to be disciplined and do the reading and take the quizzes and, you know, go through class and all this other stuff. It's sort of like an academic boot camp, but if you put your mind to it, anybody can do it. But anyway, I got to email. I said, all right, let me take a break from that. And so I'm on break from that. Here's an interesting thing, which led to today's podcast topic, which goes to how can you, because $175,000, that's an arithmetic problem. That is an arithmetic problem. And if you solve it, any talk about it being legal, a legal problem will disappear. It'll just vaporize. But you got to recognize for what it is, it's an arithmetic problem. So anyway, so going back to solve 100 property tax arithmetic problems. In law school, like, so you got to put in, I'm going to say bare minimum, 4 hours a day. Bare minimum study. I mean, because you got to read cases and read cases and read more cases. And then, you know, you got assignments that your professor's going to give you. And some people that go to law school work full-time jobs. Man, I don't know how they do it. Because, like, say, some days you're putting in 6 to 8 hours. So, you know, everybody does things differently. But bare minimum, 4. So one of the things that I picked up from some of my classmates was that, now, this is week number one. You know, you got your syllabus and, you know, what's for you for that particular semester. But then there are other people going to meet, never do law school. You're going to meet other people that they are preparing for the bar examination from week one of law school. And law school's 3 years. The bar examination comes after that if you choose to take it. But you have people, in addition to the normal workload that they get in law school, these people are doing something extracurricular where they're practicing bar examination questions 3 to 4 years in advance to take that examination. This is the ball buster from everything I've heard about it. And a lot of people don't pass it the first go around. So, and through the normal course of law school, you're taking quizzes. And they're like de facto open book quizzes. And some of those questions, man, you got to really read them very carefully because it looks like they're the exact same question, but they're not, by a phrase or a word or two. You got to read what you read and go through it that way. But so just the regular quizzes that you got, which is majority of the time, they're open books. Can you imagine an open book? You figure, oh, this is easy. I just open the book and find. Whoever writes law school examinations, pros at writing examination. That's all I can say. So as extracurricular, you have students, law students, and they might do this in medical school too and other disciplines. And a lot of them that I met, they're practicing, and they call it practice. They're doing anywhere from 40 up to 100 quizzes or questions a day. That's just part of their routine to get in the habit of practicing test taking on law school questions. And you can go online and find that. That's easy to find. But it doesn't matter if it's law school or whatever. So in this case, I don't know who this is, but for myself, you know, a lot of these things can be solved with arithmetic. So you know what? I'll give an example. You take 100, and let's take the dollar signs out of it. Just the figure of 175. Play around with that. You know, the one audio that I was looking for, and I got it here somewhere, was, you know, how many times can you make change for a dollar? How many combinations are there? Let me see if I can. I got it here somewhere. Anyway, I might run across them right now. I got so many in my audio library. But in any event, you know, there's several combinations that can come up. Just change for a dollar. You know what? Hold on. My mind is telling me. Oh, let me look this up real quick. Number combinations for change for $1. All right. There are 293 ways to come up with making change for a dollar. 293. So with the figure of 175, or $175, or 775 rubles, or euro, whatever, you know, come up with 293 ways to pay off that matter of fact, let's go to our calculators right now. Okay, we already know that there are 293 ways to come up with change for a dollar. So let's take 175 and divide it by 293. All right. That breaks down to 597. Now, that's doable. And you can break it up more than that. So, let's do it again. What did I say divide that by? Oh, 293. Oh, okay. Divided by 293. All right, that's 597. So, think of how you can come up with, as a matter of fact, let's double it. Okay. Let's say divide that by 1,000. Let's take 1,000. Let's say you can come up with 1,000. You can come up with something that you can make and sell for $1,000. Let's say you go to Facebook Marketplace and you find something, I don't know, for $500, and you can sell it for $1,500. Let's say you got a clean 1,000. You know, if you did that 175 times, the $175,000 vaporized. Or, like I say, it's just play around with it. And like I said, with the law students, you know, some practice, take 40 text questions a day. Some do 50 text quizzes a day. Some do 100. But they're in a habit. Because the more you do it, the more ideas you get, the easier it gets, because you're training your mind. And then you only need, out of that 293 possibilities, you might find one that, oh, wait a minute, this one's real easy. And you might not never get anywhere near 293. So that's my spiel for today. Now we're going to go back to this topic for 30 minutes tonight on our podcast, which is titled, the 6:30 to 7 p.m. podcast is titled Property Tax Arithmetic. So this is the project. We're working with arithmetic problem we're working on this week. But a week ago today, and they hadn't called my status case at that time. This time last week, I heard that's why we've gone from one a day to five. And by this, now we've got 10 registered. We just haven't announced what they are yet. But once we load them up to Blog Talk, and then also along what we're doing, some of you can make money with us on this. We attach to each podcast a YouTube channel, and then we're attaching a store to each channel too. I mean, each podcast too. So we'll be selling stuff as well. So you can participate. Not only with store, but we'll be do auction. So we have a store and an auction with each podcast. That's every week. And that came from one of the video audios I play here sort of frequently. Steve Harvey, 10 by 10, 10 podcasts, 10 YouTube channels to help educate and sell, 10 stores, and 10 auctions. That way the bills get paid. Okay. Let me see. What's this? All right. Bear with me for a moment before we go to the phone lines.
Start with what you have.
All right. That's what I wasn't looking for there, but he is right. Start with what you have. Last Wednesday, we had one podcast. Now we've got five that are online, and we got another five that will launch by this coming Friday. I know what I was looking for. To get, particularly new listeners, if you go to our Facebook page, which is Build Solar Homes, you will find the five podcasts between Monday and Tuesday. We've run 10 test drives, though. But that's to let people know we're on the radar with those. So normally in 2 days we would have done two podcasts. We did 10 between Monday and yesterday. Okay, if you go to our Facebook page, it's a listing of the five podcasts, which is Build Solar Homes, which is this one, Kids Building Homes, Teens Building Homes, $2,500 Homes, and Property Tax Arithmetic. It gives you the time of those. Everything's Eastern Standard Time as far as when we hear, just to your local time zone. The times on there and the call-in numbers on there as well. All right, so that you can find that on the Facebook page. And let me see. Before we go to these phone lines here. But put it this way, I thought, man, I don't want to be that lady in her position. And I said, in order for me to avoid that, and that's when I guess all these audios started coming back, particularly this one.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept, so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Would not you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, if you just do it 10 more times. I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm gonna quit anyway. So I got in my car, I went to a payphone, and I was gonna call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called, and I punched in the code, and the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this is it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, wanting to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It says, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sobel from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back, and I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida, and that night I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone. I call Chuck Sutton. I say, hey, man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I called Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduce myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this four pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened.
The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord.
And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I'd never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up, no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida, I make $300. Then I go to New York, I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.